on Chicago's talk leader, Stephanie Trussell from 89 WLS.
Welcome back. 312-591-8900. Well, I'm glad that there's some people on the line. I know I rambled on and on about the attorney, and there's a couple of people on the line that want to weigh in on that. But this half an hour is reserved for Stephen Tucker. We're going to talk Obamacare. Again, there were a couple articles in the Tribune this week that didn't make sense to me, and I don't understand. I don't think people are talking enough about Obamacare, and certainly the Republicans aren't talking enough about repealing Obamacare. So whenever I have a question about Obamacare, who do I text? Stephen Tucker. Thank you for joining me tonight, Stephen.
Hi, Stephanie. Thanks for having me back on.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. I just sit back. When Laura and I would have you on, we just sit back and, you know, we can run out and get some food or something because you're going to take over and you're going to, and the phones are ringing and people love hearing what you're saying. But what I don't like is when people wait until the last minute and then they, if I see a call at like 28 after the hour asking a big heart Obamacare question, I'm going to be angry. Get on the line now if you have a question. But we actually have at least three things we want to talk about. I was confused about this 115,000 people threatening to lose their Obamacare coverage because of, they can't verify that they're supposed to be here?
That's correct, yes. So as you know, the healthcare.gov rollout was a disaster. Mm-hmm. And one of the factors that resulted in the big disaster is that the government had not built a back end so that people could pay their premiums, and they also did not do very much verification as to whether one is here in the United States legally or not. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because, as you know, those who are not here legally cannot qualify for Obamacare subsidies, which is advanced premium tax credits and cost-sharing reductions. So now they've gotten around to sending out letters, and people were supposed to respond by the 5th of September as to whether or not they were here in the United States legally, and as such were able to obtain the health insurance benefits that they got back during the first open enrollment period, which ended on March 31st and was briefly extended until April 15th. So there's about 115,000 people that they cannot prove are here legally, so they're asking them to prove it. Well, they haven't responded by September 5th, so 115,000 people are about to lose their health insurance that they got illegally during the open enrollment period because they weren't here legally. 4,000 of those 115,000 people are here in Illinois.
So does this mean, so the deadline's passed, so are they automatically dropped?
Yes, they will lose their coverage as of September 30th. So they've got, roughly a week left to retain that coverage, illegally, by the way. Right. And then if they can sometime later prove that they're here legally, well, then they can qualify for what they call a special enrollment and re-enroll. But the chances are very good that the vast majority of them should have gotten coverage in the first place.
Right. You would think that they would verify it on the front end before you go through the whole process. Maybe that's just let's make sure you're here legally before I put the paperwork through to qualify you for Obamacare and not right. Later on say, oh, by the way, can you prove it? That's crazy.
Well, that would work with a private exchange system, you know, like Amazon.com or, you know, any kind of thing that was developed in the private sector. But the federal government does not do things efficiently. So
it's just way too much common sense. And the other article, I don't even know if they were in the same paper or back-to-back in the days in the Tribune. This whole deadline looming in the state health care exchange, they haven't settled that. And please, you know, shed some light on this. What the heck is going on?
Okay, so in the healthcare law, there are three kinds of health insurance exchanges. The first is what's known as a state-based exchange. And that is a state that says, we love Obamacare, we're going to open up a state-based exchange, we're going to handle everything, enrollment, qualification, linking up to healthcare.gov to get subsidies, all that thing on our own. There's very few states that did that. 36 states decided to go with what's called a default exchange or a federally facilitated exchange. Illinois is one of the few states within those 36 states that opened what's called a federal state partnership exchange. So that is an exchange where the state of Illinois said, we love Obamacare, but we're not going to be ready to run the system, so we want the federal government to do it, and then eventually we, the state, will take over.
Okay.
The problem with that is that thus far, our Illinois legislator has not passed any kind of legislation that would actually allow us to have a state-based exchange. And there are multiple reasons for that. The biggest is cost. Mm-hmm. The cost to the state to open a state-based exchange and release itself from the federal government's financial help would be catastrophic to the state of Illinois. This is a state that is already facing billions of dollars in unpaid health insurance pensions for public sector retirees. We've got $56 billion in retiree health insurance debt. So we are not in a position to open a state-based exchange financially and be able to facilitate the whole thing. The cost to do so, if we just use empirical data from other states, would be far more than we could afford here in Illinois. For instance, the state of Oregon opened up their own state-based exchange, which was a disaster, and not even one person could enroll. It was that ineptly run. But that cost the state of Oregon $58 million. It'll cost them $40 to $50 million a year to continue to operate. North Dakota, $40 million to implement, $5 million a year to continue to operate. Wisconsin, $38 million. Massachusetts, $36 million, their Obamacare exchange, with an annual operation cost of $45 million. So this is not money that we have. So the state of Illinois is going to file the actual paperwork to ask for a state-based exchange, but in order for it to actually come to fruition, our Illinois legislator is going to have to pass a law allowing the state to do that. And Quinn has said already that he will not use executive order to do so.
Really?
Yep.
So if the deadline comes and goes, what happens?
Well, understand that this is all for 2016. It's not okay. For this year's open enrollment, which starts November 15th. It's okay. For the following year. And so what happens is the state's kind of between a rock and a hard place because, as you know, there are four cases pending that may very well end up in the U.S. Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. The most popular is Halberg v. Burwell, which was formerly Halberg v. Sebelius. And that is basically a lawsuit that states that in the ACA, the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, it states with no ambiguity that advanced premium tax credits, which is the tax credit that lowers your health insurance premium to make it more affordable, and cost-sharing reduction, which is the tax credit that lowers your deductible, none of those things can be offered inside exchanges that are not state-based exchanges. So as we mentioned before, 36 states did not open a state-based exchange and instead have a federally facilitated exchange, including Illinois. Mm-hmm. Well, if that case reaches the U.S. Supreme Court, then what will happen is if the rule of law prevails and they actually go by the wording of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, then subsidies will not be allowed to be delivered to any state that has a federally facilitated exchange. So if the state of Illinois goes with a state-based exchange, then they'll be able to continue receiving subsidies to lower premiums. If they do not, and this case prevails in the U.S. Supreme Court, then no one will be able to get an advanced premium tax credit to lower their premiums in Illinois.
Oh, geez. We're going to keep you on for the whole half an hour, 312-591-8900. I keep thinking, as a person who was leery of Obamacare from the beginning, listening to you, this is just, wow, I'm mad that more people aren't talking about it. But for the people that think Obamacare is the best thing since sliced bread, I don't even know if they're listening. Are they taking this information in? But you can't, numbers don't lie. How did they expect us to pay for this? This is just it just blows me away that this was presented in the silver platter, that this is the greatest thing ever. And all along, you look at the details, and that many pages, we knew that the devil was in the details, that this is a lot of money. And like we said, Illinois is not in a position to take on any of this. 312-591-8900. You notice this is a short break. Stephen's not going anywhere. We're going to be right back.
89 W. Breaking news from the 89 WLS newsroom. Direct to your mobile device. Text BREAKING to 68683.
Standard text messaging rates apply.
Welcome back. This is Stephanie Trussell. We have on the line Stephen Tucker. Right now, if you want to get on the line and you have a question, 312-591-8900. Again, don't wait to the bottom of the hour and think that I can answer the question. I could guess, but I'm sure you want an expert to talk about what he knows about, and that's Obamacare. But Stephen, you told me that there is an alternative to Obamacare. Give us some good news.
Yes. One of the worst lies from our friends on the left is that the Republicans have no alternatives to Obamacare. Mm-hmm. And there have been more than 23 alternatives written by Republicans. And the most promising is, and the most comprehensive, and the one that reduces costs the most, is Dr. Overgroy's proposal, which is called Transcending Obamacare, or it actually called the Universal Exchange Plan. Okay. And it accomplishes some amazing things. Some things conservatives will love, some things conservatives won't like, but it really is a bipartisan way of reforming the entire American healthcare system and using competition, which we know as conservatives is the greatest way to lower premiums,
exactly.
Lower costs of anything, and increase quality of anything, not just health insurance. So under his plan, he ends up reforming not only Medicaid, but also preserving Medicare for all future generations, which those of us who understand Medicare know that it is not an entitlement, as Medicaid is, but it is a program that we've paid into our entire lives and wasn't done voluntarily. So many of us want Medicare to be preserved. And this program does preserve Medicare, and it does it very simply by simply extending the period of time when a senior citizen would be able to qualify for traditional fee-for-service Medicare. So today, you qualify at age 65. Okay. Under Dr. Roy's proposal, you would qualify at age 67. And during that two-year gap, his proposal mandates that health insurers are able to keep you on private health insurance and or employer-sponsored health insurance and for that two-year interim period. So by doing so, he saves Medicare for future generations, and he also encourages many things that those of us on the right have been proposing for a long time, and that is to use the private health insurance industry to provide competition against fee-for-service Medicare so that seniors would have the option to buy private health insurance and stay on private health insurance all the way to the end of their life. And those who were poor on a sliding scale would receive a subsidy to help pay for that private health insurance, but those who are not poor would receive no subsidy, and those who are not poor would no longer be forced to participate in traditional fee-for-service Medicare as they are today. Today, the wealthy cannot opt out of Medicare without forfeiting all of their Social Security benefits. So the question I've posed for many years is, why are we giving Medicare to people who don't need it? Rush Limbaugh can pay for his own health.
I think so. Yeah, him and a bunch of other billionaires that don't need it. So why? It's just too much common sense involved for it to make sense to the government.
That's exactly right. And the most important thing about his proposal is that it takes people, the most vulnerable in our society, the indigent, the poor, from a broken, bankrupt, dangerous Medicaid system and allows them not only the dignity of having private health insurance, but the ability by having private health insurance to actually see a physician in a reasonable amount of time and get quality care. And actually his proposal increases the ability for the poor to see a quality physician by over 95%. And it still saves all of this money for future generations. So over the first 30 years, the deficit reduction under Dr. Roy's proposal is $8 trillion. The 30-year revenue reduction is $2.5 trillion. So it is an amazing proposal that covers all sectors of the American healthcare system, and it is something that should be seriously considered by both sides in Congress because time is of the essence. By the year 2016, the subsidies for health insurance companies, as you know, we taxpayers are providing hundreds of billions of dollars to the health insurance industry to mitigate their losses. All of those subsidies to these health insurance companies dry up and end in 2016. So by that time, we conservatives and Republicans, because there is a difference, should have an intelligent reform proposal on the table for
ready
those to,
go.
To consider.
Exactly. See, and that's something that we don't hear a lot about. As you said, the left keeps screaming and drowning us out, saying, what's your alternative? You don't have a plan. And we do have a plan, several plans. 312-591-8900. We've got people that want to talk to you tonight, Stephen. Dave on line three, thank you for holding. You have a call for Stephen Tucker? A question for Stephen Tucker. Are you there?
Yes, Dave from Chesterton?
Yes.
Yes. No, I really didn't have a question for him. It was about Obamacare in general.
Okay.
I'm a loss prevention manager for a major grocery chain, and we arrested a woman who has been stealing formula and whatnot from us. And when she was in the office about to be arrested by the police, she said, I want to go to the hospital. And they said, why? Well, I just don't feel good. Mm-hmm. And someone made the comment, well, you don't work. How are you going to pay for it? I don't have to worry about paying for it. What do you mean? Well, Obamacare has paid for it the last four times I got arrested.
Is that a, that's
oh,
a
no, yeah, it's like, what? Oh, no, I just tell them I don't feel good. I have chest pains. I have this, I have that. They take me to the hospital, and that gets me out of jail free, so to speak. But it's paid for. And I don't think a lot of people realize that even criminals, is, I guess, my bottom line, they can...
They get it. You know,
they get it. They know how it works. They know how to work the system.
That is very scary. Well, thank you for weighing in and giving us a little bit of information. Everybody's working an angle. We appreciate that. Let's go to line two, Paul on the South Side. Do you have a question for Stephen?
Yes, I do. Three quick questions. First, what's going to happen when the employer mandate fully kicks in? And then number two, how many enrollees are there really in Obamacare? And number three, over a 10-year period when fully implemented, how much will Obamacare cost? Thanks, Steph.
Okay.
Great questions. Mm-hmm. First of all, the employer mandate has been delayed for those with what we consider to be small businesses, which are 50 employees to 100 employees. Okay. I don't believe we will ever see it come to fruition because it is so damaging to that sector of employment that it's been delayed twice by Barack Obama, again, illegally, unilaterally, and unconstitutionally because of political reasons. I don't see it happening in 2016, which is when it comes back. The people that I am worried about are the larger employers, which are 100 or more full-time employees. They have to deal with this as of January 1st of 2015, and many of them are scrambling to prepare. But the vast majority of them already provide health insurance, so I don't think a lot of that sector will be paying the massive fines that are in place if you don't. But to answer his question, I don't think we'll see the full employer mandate ever come to fruition because it's just too harmful. And then to how many people were actually insured.
That's a magic question. If you have the answer to that, can you play that number in the lottery and win too? Does anyone know the answer to that? How many actual enrollees?
Yeah, we don't know exactly how many. They have yet to release the full information. We can't even find out from the state of Illinois how many were actually enrolled in Illinois. And this is after multiple agencies have been asking them to release that data. So it's anyone's guess. We do know that out of the supposed 8 million that supposedly were enrolled, a very large section of them, well more than a million, closer to 2 million, are actually going to be losing their coverage. Most of the major insurers have said that because they didn't do proper income verification or citizenship verification, that $8 million touted number by the Obama administration is going to be much, much lower by the time that it's all ironed out.
Oh, wow. So, okay. Well, Larry on line one, calling from Salem, Wisconsin. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Okay. As I understand it, and maybe Mr. Tucker can address this better than I can, but my concern is concerning the larger employers. And you spoke earlier about the ESI, employer-sponsored or employer-subsidized insurance premiums. Whether or not there's a provision that can be changed by the IRS, because they're in control of this program, to tax the value of the employer-subsidized or sponsored insurance premiums that are contributed by the employers as income to the employees. As I understand it, they do have the authority to change that and tax the employee. As an example only, my daughter asked me, there was a new block on the DD or on the tax forms this year with initials DD and a dollar figure, and that reflected the amount of insurance her employer has contributed to her insurance, which happened to be $2,500. And this is the first year it's shown up, and it said it's non-taxable this year on the back of that form. But the IRS may be possible for them to change it so they can tax it as a value to the employees. And this provides and does or does not just provide an incentive to the employers to push these people off insurance because they also have the authority to, I believe, to phase out the tax credits offered to employers.
Okay. Are you able to address that? We have one more call I want to try to get to, too. So,
yes, let's address it right at the top. Number one, the form on the IRS form is and the information that the employer has to disclose on their pay stubs has nothing to do with taxing that as normal income for the employee. That's been a fallacy from the beginning. What it's actually there for is for the IRS and HHS and CMS to determine if that person has a qualified health plan in place. so that they are not charged the 1% this year, 2.5% by 2016, fine for noncompliance.
Okay.
So there's no current proposals that are going to use that as a as taxable income for the employee, and I hope that it never comes to fruition. And I do hope the IRS no longer acts like a legislative branch as they have been doing.
Wow. Give everybody your website, because I know there's so much information that probably went over everybody's head, and just give them your website so they have any questions, any concerns, and how you can address them, the best way to reach you.
Yes. Website is healthinsurancementors.com. Everybody needs a mentor, especially with Obamacare. And that links to truthaboutobamacare.com, where I write about the law. If we have a moment, Stephanie, I wanted to quickly address the first caller.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that that woman could go to the emergency room is not just because of Obamacare. President Reagan passed EMTALA, the Emergency Medical Treatment and Leave Act,
okay,
years and years before Obamacare, that says if you're within 250 yards of any emergency room, they have to treat you.
Oh,
so
wow,
that's where that came from, not from Obamacare.
This woman is quite astute and up on her you know, her rights, which is interesting, and it's good to know. Well, as you normal, Stephen, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. You always give out so much information. You compact that into such a short period of time. If the next time I get an article that makes no sense to me, I know who to text.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
Thank you. It's our pleasure as usual. 312-591-8900. We're back right after the news. 89 WLS.